You are listening to Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Which of the 2020 candidates is a friend of the workers?
We're going to be speaking with Sean Richmond, Program Director of the Harry Van Arsdale Jr. Center for Labor Studies at SUNY Empire State College. But just a moment appealing to Mr. President before we bring on Sean Richmond. That is Randy Newman, Mr. President. Certainly Randy Newman's Mr. President. We'll play some more of it later. But right now we're moving to Sean, who's one of the most astute analysts that I can think of, right, Ken, to help us understand what exactly is the plan for the working man and woman of these hopefuls for the Democratic presidential candidacy.
Well, there are many plans, but many of them overlap also, and a number of the presidential candidates on the Democratic side have produced such plans, starting with Bernie Sanders, who I think we should look at first. So, Sean, why don't we start by looking at Bernie's plan, which was the first one, I believe, to really come out as a comprehensive plan, and then we'll compare some of the other plans with that.
So I think we should start with the basis of the fact that the official position of the Democratic Party right now is a piece of legislation called the PRO Act, which in many respects is a repeal of the Taft-Hartley Act. It takes away the restrictions on solidarity activism, so-called secondary boycotts and hot cargo agreements. It would ban right-to-work laws. It also makes some advances in terms of processing ULP cases faster and even institutes card check in some instances where the law has been broken by an employer through an unfair labor practice charge. Now, what's fascinating about this is repealing Taft-Hartley Act has been the number one cause of the labor movement since 1947. And we're in a moment now where that is now the conservative position. That is the centrist compromise. And so if you're going to evaluate the candidates who many of whom went out of their way to have these very robust platforms about restoring the power of the institutional power of unions and giving individual workers more power and more protections on the job. If you're not proposing more than the PRO Act, you're really signaling that you're just going through the motions. And some of the candidates are just going through the motions and are merely endorsing the PRO Act. But Bernie Sanders' labor platform is excellent. And in many respects, Bernie's and Warren's platform are actually that's the biggest overlap. The only difference that they have between them, and I think this is significant, and it does make Bernie's platform the best of the field. Bernie is calling for a just cause law. To change our nation's laws, to change every individual worker's rights on the job. Right now, your right, if you don't have a contract, if you don't have a union, you're an at-will employee, which means you're free to quit if you don't like the job, and they're free to fire you at any moment for a good, bad, or no reason at all. And Bernie is proposing to change that in the law, and that would, I think, be a very, very significant shift in workers' powers, because you know the fear of termination is one of the things that holds your average working person back from taking the kinds of protest actions that you need to do on a daily basis to keep the boss from encroaching on your time and on your dignity. Warren instead sort of stays in the mode that. That liberal and progressive legislators have been in on workplace protections for really since the Civil Rights Act of trying to outlaw specific kinds of discrimination or unfairness that shouldn't exist. And there's like there's eight different places in the law that she suggests that need to be changed to protect people from getting fired for wearing dreadlocks at work, to protect women from being fired for having children or being mothers, and on and on and on. And the fact that she has to name eight places in the law to be amended really suggests that a universal right of just sort of establishing the legal basis of just cause is a much saner approach, because you could keep plugging those holes, but the bosses are going to keep punching new ones into your protections. In addition to that, both of the candidates are supporting a form of workplace representation that transcends individual workplaces, and tries to take some wages and working conditions out of competition across entire sectors of the economy. The details of how they do it, again, are different and very significant. Bernie is very clear in his platform that his approach to he calls it sectoral bargaining. That his approach is going to listen to the unions. He's going to make sure that they're at the table to craft what the law is. But I read his proposal as actually not technically bargaining. I actually read his proposal as almost a back to the future kind of thing, a blast from the past, taking a page from the first couple of years of FDR's New Deal and the labor framework under the very brief National Industrial Recovery Act, the very brief National Recovery Administration, which instituted sort of a tripartite rulemaking procedure that would set codes for entire industry. So it was not bargaining. It was not signing a contract. It was not getting a contract ratified. Unions could and did find codes getting imposed upon them. But the significant thing about it is it did apply to every workplace in the industry, and it gave unions a structure and a real appeal to workers in non-union, you know, non-collective bargaining workplaces to join the union, because the union was fighting for every worker in that industry. If you were in the garment industry and you were in a shop that didn't have a contract, you still needed to support the Amalgamated Clothing Workers Union and the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, because that code was going to impact you. So you would sign a petition, you would go to a demonstration, et cetera, et cetera. That seems to be what Bernie is proposing on the
Sean,
issue.
Sean, let me just stop you for a second. I'm not sure I fully understand what is advantageous about that. So I'm an at-will employee at this juncture, and there would be these codes that would... Ken's also... he's shaking his head at me.
Well, that's only because it isn't totally tied into the at-will issue.
Uh-huh.
It has to do with bargaining across different lines in the same industry.
It's a different proposal, yes.
It's a different proposal.
It's a different proposal. And the point of sectoral bargaining or sort of industry-wide rulemaking or whatever you call it, I like to call it an all-in system of labor relations. Other people are calling it day one. But the idea is it applies to every company in an industry, regardless of whether there was a union election there sometime in the past and the unions have somehow held on. Because the fact is that our current labor relations system, which is based upon individual workplaces, bargaining at what we call the enterprise level, the employers have largely seceded from the system. And almost every really bad employer practice that you see, everything from the gig economy and overuse of freelancers to subcontracting to offshoring, to sort of monopsony employment where companies are strategically locating their plants into impoverished communities where they are the only game in town. That is all designed to avoid the sort of the NLRB-based individual workplace unionism. And so what both candidates are saying is the way that you bring unions back for real and the way that you make substantial improvements in everybody's standard of living quickly is you take some key issues out of individual workplace negotiations and you put it on an industrial frame. So you decide on a minimum wage for an entire industry, right? Let's imagine a world where $15 an hour is the minimum wage. That's great. Auto workers, minimum wage should be more like $30 or $40. At GM, at Ford, at Chrysler, UAW can bargain for that. But at all of these non-union auto plants that are throughout the South and the Southwest, you want some sort of system that can implement a higher minimum wage on them to take those wages out of competition so that the non-union standards at Volkswagen and at Nissan aren't a drag on what the UAW was able to win at the three companies.
Good God, you're organizing the working class.
Yes, exactly.
Well, talking also about other sectors of the working class, there's the public sector. And both Bernie and Elizabeth and a few other people also are talking about giving public sector workers the right to strike, that they should be excluded from right-to-work rules, and so on and so forth. So why don't we talk just a bit about the public sector and how some of this is being looked at?
Yeah, and forgive me.
And this is the federal government and the state government now. We're
yes,
talking about.
And I'm going to get fuzzy on who's calling for what. There's some slight details that disagree.
By the way, Sean, when you say who's calling for what, are we aside from Bernie and aside from Elizabeth? Where are we with the other candidates? Are we also suggesting that Biden pretty much? Along with the others, falls in line with most of what you've discussed so far?
No, to tell you the truth, most of the candidates who took labor seriously have dropped out at this point.
Oh, that's encouraging.
I would say that the one candidate who remains in the race who actually has a very detailed platform is Pete Buttigieg. Beto O'Rourke had a great platform. De Blasio had a really good one. On and on and on. Joaquin Castro had a pretty good one. The billionaires don't care. Steyer, Bloomberg, and the rest. And basically everybody aside from Bernie, Warren, and Buttigieg are supporting the PRO Act and nothing more, which that to me, again, if that's the bare minimum, then you're saying I will do the bare minimum for labor that I'll be forced into doing.
And so you're saying Biden is not, because if we're doing a comparison, is Biden a strong departure in his labor positions from what you've expressed so far as to being somewhat in tandem between Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, notwithstanding Buttigieg?
I think Biden is completely coasting on a career of he picks up the phone when unions call and he'll do them a favor when he can. His platform is just there's just nothing there. There's the PRO Act.
Wait a minute, really? I mean that's a pretty sweeping statement. Nothing there, huh?
There's nothing of interest there. I'll put it there. That I'm interested in there. It is very disappointing. It is a very disappointing platform. I really felt that the way that this campaign was lining up, when you saw all of the other candidates there were more candidates in the field, Buttigieg very clearly talked to some very smart people at the Roosevelt Institute, at CAP, at the Century Foundation, and he certainly didn't take all their advice, but he clearly absorbed it, and he has some real policy details in there. Warren, you can tell who she talked to, and it shows in the policy detail. And Bernie has clearly been studying this issue, and his team has been studying this issue. Those are very robust and detailed platforms. I see nothing of the sort in Biden's platform.
Well, let's get back to the public sector for a while because it's this very striking demands by both Bernie and Warren and a few others in terms of giving back the public sector or giving to the public sector certain rights that they've historically not even demanded for a long term, like the right to strike and to be exempted from the dues checkoff, right.
Yeah, so, and again, forgive me, I've sort of lost track of who is supporting what specifically, because there are some candidates who are supporting.
I'm not the only one. Thank you.
Well, they're supporting. You know, I mean, there's one approach that says, well, we should have a special law for federal workers, and it's basically like an NLRB but for federal workers, and there should be a special NLRB for state and local workers. And there's another approach that says, no, we should just amend the NLRB and strike out the restriction on government workers and put everybody under the same law. There are strengths and weaknesses of both approaches. I personally think that Once you have special rights and special laws, you set yourself up for a sort of a divide and conquer, as Scott Walker called it in Wisconsin, right? When the public sector workers were under a separate law than the private sector workers, he went for the public sector workers first, divide and conquer, then he went for right to work to everybody else. So I think that just politically putting everybody under the same law and having us all have the same stakes makes a lot of sense. Although, you know, in a state like New York, even with the lack of a right to strike, you've got a lot of very powerful public sector unions who, you know, prefer the devil that they know. And they know how to work the PERB system. And change is scary to people. And that is significant in terms of, and that will be significant in general, the knowing the devil that you know when it comes to how labor leaders approach labor law reform. Should we win the Senate? Should we get a President Sanders or a President Warren in 2021? And operationalizing and actually winning some of these laws, that is going to be a very real and frustrating dynamic. That sort of the change is scary thing, and that, you know, as bad as things are, there's a lot of unions, union leaders, union activists even, who are comfortable with the framework as it exists because it's what we know.
Sean, let me ask you this: the last debate of the Democratic candidates before the Iowa caucuses, and how angry should we be that there hasn't been a single solitary
exactly.
question on the agenda about we, the working people, and what the platforms and programs and positions are that are going to better the wage, benefits, grievance, and other positions of the working man and woman in this country? I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
We should be very angry. I don't know what to say about the debates, except that they're clearly they don't belong in the news division. They belong in the entertainment division at this point. I mean, the networks are scripting a drama. You know, they're not actually trying to get at the issues. And so, you know, in a very real way, the policy debate is not going to happen on the debate stage. The policy debate is going to happen in the streets and door to door. And at those caucus tables, I mean, the caucus process is very different than a primary process. The issues will get discussed in Iowa.
Shouldn't we also be demanding that organized labor do these forums and demand that these candidates come forward and put forth their positions on something other than their websites?
I'll answer that a different way. I think the Service Employees International Union did a very excellent job during this primary process, that they were pretty clear that they were not going to do an early endorsement, and they were pretty clear that what they were looking for candidates was, tell us how you're going to put a union in every workplace in America. And so you did see a lot of candidates rise to that standard. And incorporate some of those talking points. Even if the questions weren't there, there was one debate, in the summer, where Joaquin Castro, you know, somehow managed to turn a question into his labor response, where he used that framework of you know, a union for everyone who wants one. I mean, he used a phrase very much like that. Mm. And that was clearly, he was responding to the SEIU being, you know, really clear about what their price would and really ought to be for an endorsement. I'd like to see more unions engage in the debate in that sort of way. I think you have too many union leaders who approach the questions of electability and all of that nonsense and all of that noise. And you've got some union leaders who are players within the Democratic National Committee, and you got to ask what hat they're wearing when they're sort of engaging in their union's endorsement process. I'm not sure I would want to see a union sponsored debate. I think that all of us as a movement, not like a blame the leaders kind of thing. I think that our activist base is just as bad at sort of both underestimating and overestimating our power, and not really knowing where we should be placing the demands on these candidates.
Hmm. Well, I think that's the next part of a discussion, how to take it even further. And as wonderful as Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren's particular platforms may be, hey, there's still the questions of reparations and other components of what should be demands of the working class and are part of the organizing and part of the mobilizing and part of the consideration of the very special issue of race and discrimination within all of these issues of economic justice, which unions, of course, are a significant part of. Sean, you're great. You know, you claim to be fuzzy, but you sure parsed out for us the critical issues. You don't have to tell me. I've read Sean's work. I know he's terrific. Sean, we have there's a mutual admiration society for you here.
Oh, thank you.
Really, thank you for the work that you do. Continue to educate us and take us along as the election heats up, and then we have to also do an analysis of what the flip side is, which is the Trump side, i.e. what is being unraveled and rolled back in terms of working people's rights. So again, we've been speaking with Sean Rickman, Program Director of the Harry Van Arsdale Jr. Center for Labor Studies at SUNY Empire State College. Thank you for talking about the issues of the working class, the working man and woman.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, John.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.